Lisboa, Bruxelles,
Berlin,
Warsaw.
Europe is us with Dino.
Europe is us, but who are we? Stay with us and you'll find out. Here we are, the youth of the European Union, in the podcast made by youth for youth. Europe is us. My name is Dino, I'm a journalist from Slovenia, and I'm happy to be here with you again. In our episode named EU for All Youth, our guest is Mija Bradić, a feminist and a climate activist from Croatia. And with Croatia being the last country to join the European Union, it was not a random choice to choose Mija from Croatia to talk to this time. Mija, please tell us more about yourself.
I'm Mija Bradić. I'm 21 years old and I come from Split in Croatia. I'm a climate activist and feminist and a political science student. I'm currently majoring in political humanities at the Parisian school Sciences Po. And so far in my engagement, I focused a lot on the youth advocacy in climate spaces around climate justice and on the processes happening on international level and also on EU level as well.
And we've already heard something regarding your values. Now, would you say that the EU at this current moment is working in the direction of your interest and the interest of your values?
I would say that EU loves to pretend that they're working in the interest of these specific values. For example, on climate, we know that they declared a climate emergency 2019 following youth high schoolers and student strikes. But at the same time, they're not actually delivering on anything that is needed to stop the worst consequences of the climate crisis. So we can see that there's a lot of greenwashing, so a lot of taking photos, for example, with youth activists, promoting green ideas, but at the same time, they're not actually acting on what they're supposed to, and they're not focusing on the climate justice aspect of the climate transition. So some of the solutions they're heavily promoting are false solutions. They want to create markets for exchanging the greenhouse gas emissions. So in that way, actually, many of the countries would be allowed to consume even more and to kind of pay their way out of committing to decreasing their carbon footprints. And we can see that the EU Parliament supported gas and fossil gas and nuclear energy as transition fuels, which is really completely out of the touch with the urgency that we're facing regarding climate. And in terms of feminism, there have been some very scary trends actually in the Europe right now, with the extreme right rising almost everywhere. And unfortunately, there is fear that this will continue rising, but at the same time, the EU mechanisms have allowed for some processes to kind of counter this. So at this moment, there is a very interesting campaign being conducted by NGOs from multiple countries, including Croatia, Slovenia, Poland, France, and more, called My Choice, My Voice. I think it's called My Voice, My Choice. They're trying to petition the access to abortion to the EU Parliament. So we can see that some mechanisms exist, but at the same time, I think a lot of the, especially progressive youth in Croatia, have been quite disappointed in the EU because we have expected it to provide more on these specific issues of gender equality, of social equality in general, and in recent years, especially around climate justice.
Let's travel as we always do in our podcast. This time, we're not going too far from me. We're actually staying in Slovenia to talk to Petar Mrdović, one of the two Slovenian students at the College of Europe in Belgium.
Yeah,
It seems to me that the European Union still has a lot of room for maneuver here, especially in the field of education, because in the current educational program and in the process, insufficient attention is paid to the European Union and to understanding the functioning of the Union. It is true that it is a slightly more complicated process of operation, but young people should have acquired some basics during their education. Because today we are already talking about generations that were actually born within the European Union, and in fact this is also their project of some kind. Secondly, I would like to mention, for example, all these projects that the European Union co-finances, that a slightly larger campaign should be made here, especially in terms of awareness, so that young people know or are aware of everything that the European Union offers them, and how much it is present in our daily life. We should not take the EU for granted, as some people take it today, but it is really a project that developed all these years after the end of the Second World War, and it is actually an exceptional opportunity for the development of young people, and then also for acquiring this European identity. Back to Mia, back to Croatia, pardon me, actually to France, where Mia is currently. How should we reach youth? Now, we've heard Petar. Petar says that the educational system needs to be changed. And how do we otherwise reach youth, especially in rural areas?
That's a good question. I think in Croatia specifically, a lot of the youth are still disconnected from the EU and also lack some of the basic knowledge on what the EU does and what resources are available for them as young people in the EU. I think they should definitely communicate more with places where a lot of the youth spend their time. So this can be civil society organizations, arts clubs, sports club, etc. And for youth in rural areas, obviously, there are even more barriers to access to this information. Some of it could be done through online education and specifically targeting this kind of youth. But I think a lot of the barriers could be resolved with having actually teams of people that are dedicated to spreading this kind of education. However, we see in Croatia that there is not really an interest in sharing a lot of the information about what the EU does. Personally, I've done some of it just on my own initiative, where I went to my high school and talked to young people about the European Solidarity Corps project I've done, because I think I'm one of the rare young people in Croatia who have participated in this program, as a lot of them were in my high school were really impressed with this program and they wanted to participate, but they have never heard about it before. In France, for example, they have Houses of Europe in many of the cities, even some of the smaller cities. So it could be a great way to engage these kind of places to educate young people about the EU. And even, for example, pay for trips for people from rural areas to come to regional centers in their counties and learn more about the EU.
Thanks, Mia. Let's change the perspective a bit here. How do we reach the EU? So how does youth reach the European institutions? Do we need to have more members of the European Parliament? Now, in Croatia, we've seen a list of candidates called the Gen Z list. It's a list made by Nina Skočak, a young influencer.
Oh, definitely. I believe that's one of the key answers. And it's disappointing that I've seen recently, it was the Gong NGO who published the information that out of all candidates for the EU elections from Croatia, only 29 of them are younger than 30. And out of those 29, 12 belong to the independent list of Nina Skočak, which is also has been called the Gen Z list. So this obviously shows that young people are not only interested in politics, but they're prepared to be its main actors. But unfortunately, if you think in terms of EU Parliament, there's very little space in some of the main parties for young people. Many of them don't even have any young people on their list for EU Parliament, which shows, in a way, to the young people in Croatia that they are seen as not as capable as some of their older colleagues, which is completely opposite from the truth. So I'm really interested in this development. I'll be following closely the elections themselves and the Gen Z list. And I'm curious what their results, but also the results of other parties that feature more young people will tell us about young voters and their interests.
Let's travel once again, this time to Poland, to hear from Justyna Wiśniewska, a 20-year-old student from Poland. Of course, it is possible to encounter opinions to the effect that the Union does not want accessibility for all and that it is not for everyone. But in fact, under the disguise of these high-flown ideals, it only promotes the interests of the so-called educated elite. I have the impression that, for a political entity, the European Union is in fact very much committed to the values it promotes as key, such as stable cooperation between states, equality, inclusiveness, accessibility, and respect for others. I think that the programs introduced by the Union are really helping to promote these values in Europe. And this can be seen, for example, in how much the culture and socio-political landscape of the former Iron Curtain countries has changed since they became part of the European Union. Back to Mia. Change, change, change. Each generation brings changes. We've heard Justina's view regarding changes in former Iron Curtain countries. What about changes in Croatia? So Croatia joined the EU on the 1st of July 2013. What are the biggest differences that you've seen in your country before and after it joined the European Union?
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest differences that I felt is the freedom of movement and just the ease with which we can cross borders. I remember in 2021, it was my first time traveling to France. And I was carpooling with some friends, and we crossed the borders from the border from Slovenia to Italy. I mean, basically, we just crossed from one country to another without any border or anything. And at one point, we were in Slovenia, and another, we were just in Italy all of a sudden. And I was very confused because I didn't understand it was, in a way, that easy. And I think entering Schengen has definitely contributed to this freedom of movement. However, one of the biggest problems that the EU poses is also fortifying its outside borders, which especially reflects in the violence against migrants and refugees, including on Croatian borders. And it kind of challenges a bit more with the Croatia becoming the border of the Schengen zone, its relationship with its members, with its neighbors who are EU candidates and in general are not EU members. And I would say one of the really the biggest differences has been access, greater access to EU funds, especially for the civil society. I worked with several civil society organizations in activism, but also in culture. And a lot of the programs, for example, cultural programs that the Circus Collective, the Association of Artists conducts are possible because of the EU funds, especially since there is still, it's an artistic scene that's in development and there's very little ambition in the government and the Ministry of Culture to actually address the needs of the artists in creation in this field. So EU funds have been quite helpful. But at the same time, they can be abused. We've seen even recently in Croatia some big scandals around the abuse of EU funds. So there definitely needs to be addressing in how these funds are given to states and how the states are held accountable by the EU, because obviously it hasn't been as successful in Croatia with so many scandals. And lastly, I would say, having the programs like Erasmus and like the European Solidarity Corps personally has been quite impactful because I spent a year living in France through European Solidarity Corps, and it really allowed me to create connections, learn the language, get specialized in one of my passions. So I think those benefits have been really, really impactful on my life, and I'm hoping that the knowledge about these opportunities existing will become more available for the youth throughout Croatia.
Thanks, Mia. I just have three more short questions. Let's meet you a bit more personally. Each one of my guests gets these questions, and they do tend to be the toughest, so get ready. The first one is, what is your favorite memory?
Oh, I think now I remember one of the moments when I was at COP26 in Glasgow. It was a big UN conference, and it's very inaccessible and very difficult to understand as a youth observer. But at the same time, every evening we would have this meeting for all the civil society members. It was a wonderful space, just a wonderful atmosphere where everyone could share and learn.
Mm-hmm. And the second one is, what is your biggest fear? It can be either spiders or the rise of the far right, the far left, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I think all the other consequences that will come with the climate crisis not being addressed. So other than, like, just, I'm saying this as just, but not, it's a huge, like, extreme weather events and people losing lives. There's also things like the rise of the far right, moving away from democracies, and all the consequent social impacts that could be seen.
And my last question to you, what's your biggest wish?
My biggest wish? I think I've got to continue the same line for the climate crisis to be addressed. I think in order to do that, we need to question fundamentally the way our economies and our societies function. And I believe we have the people power to do that. And hopefully we'll be able to achieve it as soon as possible.
Thank you, Mia. And thank you all for your attention. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and listen to what we have to say, because Europe is us.
Lisboa, Brussels, Sofia, Berlin, Warszawa.